September 1997, one of my student advisees at La Sierra University gave me a treasured gift, a framed print of Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. At that time, I had no plans, no hope, and no future. A few weeks later, my life drastically changed when my husband of 34 years died of cancer. It was a very dark, painful time in my life. 3 years later, I was ready to transform the family room known as the den. My husband was a university professor here at La Sierra University, and our den had many of his books and files. I decided to remove everything in the room that reminded me of the way life had been. The den was brown, and as you can see, brown is not my favorite color. Over the next year, I created a room with colors that I like: orange, lime green, and yellow. Upon completion, I could no longer call the room the den, so I named it my happy room. Creativity and color transformed this room, and the process was life-giving. It helped me to go from darkness to light. 2 years later, a woman from Kenya was visiting to raise money for a water well at a widow's village. These women had a very sad and difficult life, and they would have to walk long distances to collect water. I invited her to my home, and she enjoyed being in my happy room. After she returned to Kenya, I received an email from her stating she had shown the photos of my happy room to all the widows. And all the widows laughed and smiled. That night, I could not sleep. The sad widows laughed and smiled. Wow, I understood. That night, I knew when I retired from La Sierra University, I would be creating happy rooms around the world. But I had no idea when, where, or how. That would be God's joyful surprise. In 2008, after I retired, one of my former students, who was teaching at an Adventist school in southern India, invited me to visit. When I arrived, the bright, beautiful children greeted me with beaming smiles. They were thrilled when I visited their classrooms. I found the hall at the school to be a bleak place for students to eat and study. And early one morning, when the crowing rooster woke me up, I knew we had to change that hall into a happy room. The principal, teachers, and some students enthusiastically showed up to help. Exuberant laughter was contagious. In two nights and one day, the walls exploded with saffron yellow, hot pink, green, and blue, with minarets painted above the windows. Creating this happy room for children who were low caste and poor helped them understand they were beautiful and valued. And India gave my dream the reality that happy rooms around the world could indeed materialize. Since then, I have directed over 30 projects in 10 countries. Very often, I have no idea what I will be doing until I arrive on location at an elementary school in a hot, humid town in Guatemala. Two La Sierra University students and myself were more than surprised when we thought we would be painting two or three classrooms. But no, they were expecting all 9 classrooms to be painted. And they told me that all the evangelical churches in the area were praying for us. We sure needed their prayers. 9 classrooms in 3 days. Yes, overwhelming to say the least. Find sufficient quality paints, direct novice painters, and cope with heat and humidity. and both my student artists, who were also my translators, became ill. But I do know that unbelievable things happen with happy rooms. Community people, teachers, and students were willing, eager, and enthusiastic. In 3 days, all 9 classrooms and the huge auditorium and the school facade were all painted. This school became a beacon of hope and beauty in that poor neighborhood. God's extravagant, joyful surprises are always abundant. At a rural Adventist high school in the Solomon Islands in the South Pacific, I marveled at the students' artistic talents. Creativity blossomed, and I would often say to them, "Wow, this is so gorgeous." Soon they made up songs and dance. "Oh, it is gorgeous, it is spectacular, it is amazing, it is brilliant." My name Iris means rainbow, so rainbows are a common theme in happy rooms, and they don't always take the traditional shape of a rainbow. At this school, rainbows appeared as the tail of a rooster, the trunks of coconut trees, and a wall of rainbow colors created and painted by high school students from Australia. Bright, colorful murals became a wonder in that poor community, so I will be returning there next month to do some major projects. For 2 years at an Adventist prison chaplain in Moldova dreamed that someone would come and paint the ugly walls that surrounded the courtyard at a section of the prison for mothers and their young children. Moldova, bordering Romania, is one of the poorest countries in Eastern Europe. With a guard always watching, 5 artistic male prisoners, some local students, and 2 friends, the walls came to life with vibrant, colorful art, and as always, smiles and laughter from the artists and those watching. The imposing director of this large prison stated that in all Moldova, he had not seen such beautiful art. And amazingly, it's at a prison. Appreciation and gratitude is profound at every project. Western Ethiopia, a dreary women's center, would become a place of healing and hope for desperately poor women. At the celebration of completion, everyone had tears. One woman put her hands on my shoulders, and with tears streaming down her face, she spoke passionately to me in her Oromo language. No one translated. They didn't need to. I understood. I went to this region of Ethiopia 3 times, as I really enjoyed working with the friendly, happy people who have a passion for the poor. Traveling to a little kindergarten out in the scenic countryside, the road and dirt track were rather challenging. It took us 1 hour to travel about 6 miles. Happy rooms at this remote location were a marvel. The children who walked long distances to go to the school were incredibly fun and engaging. I loved these beautiful, spirited children, and I laughed and celebrated. How could it be better? My happiness reached up to the heavens. Drawing is not one of my talents, and all happy room drawings are freehand. When I first went to Ethiopia, I was invited to paint the first grade room at the learning village. My initial drawings were pathetic, but fortunately, the art teacher came to the rescue. 4 years later, I returned, this time with artist friends. A recently built kindergarten needed happy rooms, and the art teacher commented, "You have really come a long way since you were here last." I certainly had. Every project has taught me something. At an orphanage in Cambodia, I directed hilarious, energetic high school students from Australia to create murals that celebrated Cambodian life. At a clinic in Kenya at the Masai Mara, I was really wowed when the local chief volunteered to paint. In a pediatric ward at Kendu Adventist Hospital, student nurses and resident doctors showed me that happy rooms inspire busy people to make time to create joyful places. That's Kenya, okay. A Romanian kindergarten was transformed. Many of the artists were young students who joyfully painted late into the night, creating murals of the Romanian seasons. Directing a happy room at a crisis center for children in Papua New Guinea was a very emotional experience. 23 children ages 4 to 14 lived at the center. They had been abandoned or abused or traumatized. But on arrival, all the children were smiling and eager to paint a bright, happy room. It wasn't easy for my friend and myself to contain their enthusiasm. Two of the smaller boys began to argue and push each other, so I wrapped my arms around them and said, "We are painting a happy room here, and in this room we are happy. No more problems." All the children were involved in creating this magnificent mural. Papua New Guinea is famous for the world's most extraordinary birds, the birds of paradise, also called birds of the gods. At Sopaz Hospital in the rugged highlands, the project included 14 of the 39 species, and I had to include one of my favorite photos from this region. When an invitation came from China to direct happy rooms, I eagerly accepted. An artist friend and I would be based at a large university in Jiangxi province, one of China's poorest provinces. Our first room was at a kindergarten. Then other university art students painted the Chinese zodiac on the large wall surrounding the kindergarten. There was much laughter when some of them asked me to give them English names. I named one very creative student, Picasso. For 5 days, we stayed at government headquarters in a country town. Each day, we were driven to a school out in the beautiful countryside. Local art teachers and university students created happy room wonders. Inside and outside the classrooms, and my friend painted an impressive 17-foot dragon. It was a masterpiece. The Chinese love dragons. At a farewell dinner at the town where we stayed, we learned it was a very historic place as Chairman Mao started training his recruits there. One of the government officials stated, 80 years ago, a revolution began here. Now, 80 years later, a new revolution is beginning. We will start spreading happy rooms across China. I kept hearing, "Iris, you have planted a seed that will grow into a mighty tree that will spread across China." Before I left, it had already sprouted. While happy rooms were mushrooming internationally, I was thrilled to direct 4 projects with La Sierra University students here in Riverside. 2 of the happy room projects were at a home for homeless women and children. Inside, the corner of the living room where the children played was transformed into an animal fantasy land. And outside, the drab play area became a fun and joyful place for the children to play. Happy rooms around the world are not just about brightly colored painted walls. Happy rooms are about giving dignity, respect, pride, hope, love, and bringing celebration, laughter, smiles, joy, and beauty to those who least expect it. I'm so grateful that God had plans for me to create happy rooms. Psalm 30, we read, "He turned my sorrow into joy. He took away my clothes of mourning and gave me festive garments to rejoice in, so that I might sing and dance praises to the Lord. I will give thanks to God forever."
Isn't that inspiring? I learned three things about Iris this last week, talking with her. One, we can resolve our energy problems if we could just harness the energy that Iris brings into a room. Our renewable energy problems are solved, Iris. Let's figure this out. Number two, second thing I learned was this, that Iris goes to places where people are struggling, marginalized, where people have been orphaned, widowed, where people have been told that they're not worth much, where folks have been told that because they don't have the material trappings of prosperity, they have actually not achieved what we all have achieved. She goes to tough places. I looked at the list of the 10 countries top that the United Nations says are the happiest, and you have not been to a single one of those. Did you know that? As a matter of fact, the first country on your list doesn't rank even in the top 100. By the way, the top 10 countries are always Scandinavian countries because they have IKEA, pickled fish, and delicious Danishes. Iris goes where people need to be reminded that God the Creator made this world the first happy room. Fritz Guy's words. Fritz Guy. I'm stealing words from Fritz Guy. The second thing I learned, or third thing I learned about Iris is that she tries to paint things in the rooms where she goes to paint that are related to where she is. For example, in a couple of weeks, she's going to go back to the Solomon Islands. And there, she's not going to paint Disney characters, unicorns, or strange creatures that don't exist. I wish you could see the way her eyes light up when she tells you what she's going to paint. The Solomon Islands, the Solomon Islands. See if I can do her accent. They are in the Coral Sea. We're going to paint creatures that live in the Coral Sea. How exciting. Fish and turtles and eels and sponges. She's opening their eyes to the blessings that they already have. Iris is doing the same work that Jesus was doing on earth, opening our eyes to the blessings that we already have. She's telling people, you are more than you've been told you are. You're more than orphans, widows, marginalized people. You live in God's happy room and you are blessed. You have more than you thought you had. Matthew 5 records the words of Jesus. It's an important moment in the life of Jesus. It is his first speech, his first sermon. And he begins this speech by speaking blessing into the people who are hearing him. It is nothing short than a miracle. This poor, seemingly powerless peasant rabbi named Jesus stands on a hill and he lays out a constitution for a new kingdom. He lays out a charter for the way things are going to be from now on. He's painting a vision of a happy room, Iris, for the people who are hearing him. And here are his words. He says, you are blessed. Yes, you. Not the Caesar, not Herod, not those who oppress you, not those in power, not those who seem to be blessed by God because they yield power and they have prosperity. You are blessed. You are blessed. And the word blessed, makarios, say it with me, makarios, in Greek. No, people, you're with me. We're almost done. Get your mind away from that roast you're having for lunch for a moment, from that delicious salad. Makarios, say it with me. Okay, now we're, okay, good. This word is better translated happy. Yeah, did you know that? Happy are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Happy are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Happy are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Happy are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Happy are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Happy are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Happy are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Happy are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Jesus is talking to people who have not felt blessed, who have not felt makarios, who have not felt happy. And he's telling them, right now, you are blessed. You are happy. No. This is what we do with the Beatitudes. We turn them into, hey, this is the way you become blessed, and this is the way that you become happy. We list these things like this: be poor in spirit, be meek, be mournful, be merciful, be persecuted. But if you've ever heard it explained this way, it's never made sense to you. Why? Because it's not supposed to be that way. Who wants to be poor in spirit? Who wants to be persecuted? Although we happen to sometimes make it sound like being persecuted is really going to be the thing that we're looking forward to. Here comes the persecution, bad. But it's good because, well, I don't know. Do we like it or we not? Do we stockpile food? Happier. No, Jesus is saying the way you are right now, you are blessed. It's not become this. You are already blessed. Jesus stands in front of that crowd that day, and it's a revolution. He doesn't say become this. He says, you are more than you realize. You have more than you realize. You are blessed. You are makarios. You are happy. Henry Nouwen wrote this: we sometimes lose hope and lose confidence. Our wounds, and translate any way you want, our disease, our brokenness, our cancer, our whatever you're going through today, our wounds become our definition. And sometimes we have to consult the vision of someone who is not us, who sees deeply into our lives and can tell us truths that maybe we have forgotten, that we are more than we've been told, that we have more than we knew we had, that we are blessed. Two observations and then we're done. To the roast and the salad. Number one, we got to get this straight. Number one, happiness is less a pursuit, with apologies to our country and its mantra, the pursuit of happiness. It's not a pursuit, it is a virtue. It's a virtue that's cultivated. We pursue things. We pursue money, fame, prosperity, promotions, high GPAs, acceptance letters to the next program. We pursue a man or a woman. We pursue those things, but those things ultimately will never yield what Jesus is telling us happiness is. That is a virtue that must be cultivated. And those who have faith in Jesus and his words will find true happiness. Why? Because we know that these extrinsic pursuits, money, fame, power, and all the things that the world tells us is really what's going to make us happy, eventually will lead us to dead ends because they're ever vanishing horizons. And researchers know this. They know what Jesus taught. And that is this, that intrinsic pursuit, things related to personal growth, relationships, community, all these things are actually what yield the true happiness, blessedness we're looking for. Did you know that the country of Bhutan, I hope I'm saying that right, because if I'm not, it'll be really awkward. Anyone here from Bhutan? Okay, good. They have stopped reporting their GDP. They're now only reporting their GNH, their gross national happiness. Isn't that awesome? They're more concerned with their population's gross national happiness. And they're measuring it this way. Are people more connected to community? Are people experiencing personal growth? And are they experiencing close personal relationships? We're going to report that. And they've also made a decision to stop ravaging their forests and building dams to make more power so we can power more devices that draw us away from all of the things that we think will make us happy. We should do that here. Let's start reporting our gross national happiness. Second observation, and then we're done. The kingdom belongs to these. The kingdom belongs to these. Jesus said this about only three types of people. Number one, the poor in spirit. Number two, those who are persecuted because of righteousness. Three, children. The kingdom belongs to these. So if you're not in one of these categories, you're out. The kingdom belongs to these. One, the poor in spirit. Two, those who are persecuted because of righteousness. And three, children. Did you see the children painting in Iris' rooms? There's a reason why Jesus said this, and it came really clear to me last fall. Last fall, we had this picnic, and we chose the hottest day of the year to have our picnic. Remember that, for those of you who were there? Some of you lived through this. You remember it. It was 180 degrees outside. Some of you went inside the cafeteria across the campus because you knew if I stand in the sun, I will die. Some of us braved the heat. We were outside trying to survive and enjoy this picnic because we know that true happiness comes from being connected and in community. A bunch of kids formed a gang, probably from age 5 to about 10 years old. And the gang first, it was just about having fun, and it was so fun to watch these kids ignoring the heat. It was a dry heat, of course. We have dry heat here. But as I tell my friends in the East Coast, it's a dry heat. It's like a blowtorch in your face. It still hurts. The kids were roaming the campus mall, having fun, about 10 of them. And then they turned to crime. They thought it'd be hilarious to go towards the end of the picnic and open one of the large coolers that the social committee had put out so that we would stay hydrated in the heat. They opened the top, and there was ice and water in there, and so they found cups like this one, and they would dip the cups into the water, and they would come chasing one of us to throw the water on. Now, here's what's tricky. It's a careful balance, because if you act like you're enjoying it too much, then you're no fun. If you go, right, I'm hot, douse me, then they'll go, ah, this guy's no fun. So you have to actually act like you're running away, going, no, I hate this so much. But you're thinking, man, please, it's so hot, I really hope you get me. And once you've achieved this balance, it becomes so much fun for them that they chase you down. And I mastered this balance. They chased me down. I must have gotten 20 cups of ice cold water dumped on me, and then I'd had enough. I said, enough of this, I'm near hypothermia. And then I saw him. His name will remain nameless. I will not name this child, but he sits around here. We know each other really well. I saw him struggle to try to get to the top of the cooler, dipped his little arm in there with great trouble. He finally managed to get enough water in his little cup. And then he looked for me. There, he found me and then began to make his way towards me, slowly, so he wouldn't lose one drop of this water. And I saw him coming and I thought, man, I don't want that cup of water on me. I've had enough. But I acted like I was running away. Oh no, you're gonna get me, oh no. And then I finally, when there was only about 5 feet left, I turned to face him. I was like, okay, do your deed. And he got to me. And right as he was about to dump this water that took him so much effort to get to me, I did a terrible thing. I'm not proud of this. Boys and girls, this is not the way you should live. I'm only reporting to you what happened. I did. I flipped that cup right on his face. And all that ice water went. It was beautiful. It was hilarious. The water went crashing in his face, and ice poured through his face, and one little piece of ice left dangling in his little shirt. And when the water finally cleared from his eyes, he opened and looked at me, and his little lips curled, and he began to cry. I know what you're thinking. I know I'm a jerk. And I felt so horrible. And I immediately got on my knees and I said, "Buddy, buddy, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And when the ice and the water had finally cleared, he looked at me and he said, "That was mean." He spoke truth to power. And then he walked over to me and gave me a hug, completely unsolicited. And then he smiled and ran away, joined his little gang, living in the kingdom like a child, unencumbered with thoughts of vengeance or retribution, aware of this great happy room that God had given him to live in. 110 degree weather aside, he didn't care. He was gonna live blessed. And he walked away that afternoon blessed. Me, not so much. I've been dealing with guilt feelings. But he was strong and he was blessed. And when Jesus said, "The kingdom belongs to these," I believe that's what he meant. Those who live this way. May you go in peace today to serve and know Jesus. May he lead you to a blessed, happy, joyful life. The virtue, not the pursuit. May you know him. And as you know him, may you come to live like a child in his kingdom. I pray this in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.